Hello, this is Janet Gallen welcoming you to Love Letters Live. Today's guest is, you know, I know everybody is something special, but this is interesting in a way that we don't often hear, and we don't often hear it because of the news industry. I want to introduce you to Lee Gordon, who is the founder of a school which he will tell you about, Hand in Hand, in Israel. And I learned about this. You asked me how I learned about Hand in Hand. I learned about it because a few years ago, the school was torched. It was set on fire. And it was in the newspaper only because there was bad news connected to it.
Right.
And I'm horrified by that. This school should be really front page news in its own right for what it accomplishes.
Right.
And
right.
I'm just going to go to you and you talk about...
Sure.
Why don't you start with how you came to found this school? Or
sure.
Never mind, start with the school.
Sure.
Then we'll get back.
Well, first of all, we have now six schools in Israel.
It was five last time we spoke.
Right.
That says something about parents' desire to make peace at the
right.
very basic level of living together.
Right.
Go.
So Hand in Hand is a nonprofit organization in Israel, and we've created a network, a growing network, of integrated and bilingual schools for Jewish and Arab Israeli kids. We started in 1998 with just 50 children, a kindergarten class in Jerusalem, and a first grade class in the north of Israel in an area called the Galilee. Those schools have grown. The kindergartners moved up a grade. This year we have 1,545 students
in
six schools.
And what does that say, that parents are knocking down the doors? Arabs and Jews are
right.
knocking down the doors to get in these schools and raise their children together as friends for life.
Right.
You say what that
right.
means.
I think that, you know, in the midst of a situation that people around the world look at as being bleak, where there's
right.
the peace process seems to be on the rocks, where people are cynical, they don't believe that peace is possible, we have a growing constituency of Israeli citizens, Jews and Arabs. 20% of Israeli citizens are Arab, 80% are Jewish, who want to build something different
yes.
for their kids, for themselves, for their communities. And what's really wonderful about these schools is it's really, I think, an example of the children leading the adults. You know, the parents chose...
But, the parents have to enroll them.
They have to enroll them, but the parents of these kids went to segregated schools.
Right.
Many of the Jewish parents had never really met an Arab beyond a superficial encounter in a store or something like that until they came to the school and met their child's friend from the Arab community or vice versa.
And that is how mothers often make best friends,
yeah.
is the parents of the other children
through
school.
Their kids.
Yes.
There's a wonderful story about a woman who enrolled her daughter in our third school, which we opened in 2004, a Jewish mother who lived in the area of central Israel where the school is. And she said, when I first met her at the beginning of that first school year for her, she said, if you had asked me 3 months ago if I would see or let my daughter go to her Arab friend's house in the neighboring Arab village of Umm al-Fahim for a birthday party, she would have said, no, I'd be too afraid of what would happen to her. And yet her daughter did go to this birthday party. And then she said, if you had asked me 3 weeks ago if I could see my daughter going to a sleepover party at this same girlfriend's house, she would have said, absolutely no. And not only is her daughter, we became best friends, this Jewish girl with an Arab girl, the mother went to the house and saw that, you know, these parents were just like her. Were
yes.
similar, had the
yes.
same kind of interests and desires and fears and,
yes.
and heartbreaks, etc. You know, pessimists can look at a project like this and say that today Israel, which is a country of 8 million people, approximately 2 million children in the school system, and you have 1,545 students, that's like a fraction of a percent, it's a drop in the bucket, you're doing nothing. Optimists, people who believe that change is possible, will say, you started with 50 kids, and now you have over 1,500
well,
with a waiting list.
That's the obvious thing to look at. You don't need to be a physicist to know that up is up.
Exactly, exactly.
Oh,
I mean, peace is clear.
And by the way,
sure.
can I just go back to something you said, which is people look at this area of the world and they see bleak. That is squarely at the feet of the news industry, for which I have almost nothing but contempt.
Mm-hmm.
I would love to go on record saying that.
Okay.
It's been
right.
the case for a long time.
Right.
It's the news industry. Bad news keeps us glued to the television.
Sure. It's entertaining.
Sadly enough, it's
yep.
become entertainment. That's horrible. But it also, as long as the news is bad, I think we're afraid to go out of the house. We stay tuned to see when it gets safe.
Right.
And it never
right.
will.
Right.
And
I mean,
it never will. Good news means you can turn off the TV and go outside and enjoy the world.
Right. Right.
And the point of the news industry is to sell lipsticks. Okay.
Right.
My anger is just huge.
Right.
Sorry, people.
No, I mean, it's true that, you know...
So the news industry sets a baseline of acceptable behavior or normal behavior, which is slaughtering each other.
Right.
Not the majority of behavior is that, I don't think.
Right.
Okay.
I mean, I think that, you know, for us... You know, we would sometimes, you know, as you mentioned, you heard about Hand in Hand when we had a really horrible incident.
I never would have known about it if the newspaper didn't have bad news to report.
I mean, luckily, you know, those incidents are few and far between. There are people in Israel that don't like what we're doing on both sides. I mean, this attack happened in November, almost 2 years ago, November 2014, in which a group of three young men, we know because they're now serving jail time, three right-wing Orthodox Jewish extremists who were part of a very small group came and not only spray-painted graffiti on the walls of the school in Hebrew that said death to Arabs.
Oh, I'm glad
they set fire to two classrooms. That got a lot of publicity. I mean, you know, luckily out of that, we got a lot of positive publicity.
Good.
People who came and said, you know, what is this model all about? What are you doing inside
good,
the classroom?
That's what I did. I decided to look and see what the school was. I'm
right.
glad others did the same.
Exactly. Exactly.
Okay, so.
And, you know, it's not as... And I want to also point out that there are many, many Israelis, even Israelis who would not send their kids to schools like ours because they want a different kind of education. They still say things like, what you're doing is really important. You know, it's really important that Arab and Jewish citizens of Israel build some kind of common ground. It's not for everyone. But our impact, and we feel that our impact, of course, it's the strongest on those kids who are in the classrooms and their parents and the wider community. But the fact that other people who may not be sending kids to our school see that a school like this exists, it challenges them to think that, well, if Jews and Arabs can go to school together, they can also work together, build businesses together, make peace together,
but
overcome.
Building businesses together has been the case forever.
Right, but even that is difficult in a context where
it doesn't make the newspapers.
Right, right. Okay. I mean, there are lots of there's an organization that does joint economic development, and there are environmental groups, and you know, our goal, we now have six schools. Our goal is to sort of build model schools like these in every community in Israel where Jews and Arabs live close together, so that there can be an option for parents, so that in the educational sort of landscape, they can see, well, there's this school and this school, and there's this integrated Jewish-Arab school, so that's a choice for parents, so that they don't have to lead segregated lives. I mean, there's this tremendous opportunity. Israel is in a part of the world where it's surrounded by Arabic-speaking people, and yet the contact is so, you know, slim and superficial. Here's an opportunity to learn a second language. The kids are learning Hebrew and Arabic together.
Oh, I was going to ask you that. Okay. So
bilingual education.
Even if you think of nothing else, which of course you do, learning two languages in two foreign alphabets is enormously good for your brain.
Exactly. And then starting in third grade, they also learn English.
Yes, I was wondering about that.
So by the time, you know, if you go into a classroom where...
So that's three languages in three separate alphabets.
Right. And by junior high and definitely by high school, these are kids who are conversing in three languages. English is, you know, the language of the international language that Israelis need to learn. And language is also a kind of a handle into someone else's community and culture. Language, you know, is one of the major sort of divisions between Arabs and Jews in Israel, but it also is a way...
Hello, Tower of Babel.
Right. And, you know, when you speak, when you travel and you speak someone's language, it's a sign of respect.
Oh, I was just going to say that.
Yeah,
yes. When I was a girl in Los Angeles, I went to a private school, and this is like in the 40s, and we had to learn Spanish. We were in the first grade, and the woman who ran the school said, we have to learn Spanish because there were people in Los Angeles who were older and didn't speak English, and we needed to know how to talk to them and be polite.
Right, right. That's wonderful. I mean, and you know, it's too rare, unfortunately.
I know.
And there's all these opportunities in this country too. There are Spanish speakers all around us. There are Chinese and Korean and Vietnamese speakers around us.
When you use somebody else's language, there's a smile that crosses their face.
Exactly.
Like nothing else brings.
Exactly.
Isn't that amazing?
One of the things also that we started about 6 years ago is, you know, our executive director in Israel, a man named Shuli Dichter, was really a visionary and kind of took over from us and brought the organization even to higher sort of places. He made a comment which I thought was very, very sort of profound. He said, it's not enough for us to expect the kids to sort of lead this social change. They're kids, and we want the kids to have a normal education. We want them to play soccer and play hooky and get in trouble with their teacher and do whatever they do in school and have a really good experience. The parents and the wider community needs to take up this burden of building bridges between Arabs and Jews in Israel. And so we created this program in Hand in Hand, which we called Shared Communities. So around every school, we have a community kind of organizing department. We have part-time community organizers.
What do they do?
And they not only bring the parents together, but they invite other Jewish and Arab adults to come together. The school is kind of the centerpiece. They come together to share holiday celebrations. I mean, this year, for example, Hanukkah and Christmas fall at the same time. And in our schools, most of the Arabs are Muslim, but we have also Christian Arabs. The past few years, Ramadan has happened in the summer, and we've done these Ramadan evenings in which we've invited people, Arab Christians and Jews, to come and join Muslims and understand what it's like to break the fast in the evening. We've done discussions, film series, sometimes more difficult meetings when there is a discussion about, we've had five wars during the time our Hand in Hand has been in existence. We've had three wars between Israel and Hamas in Gaza, and two wars between Israel and Hezbollah in Lebanon. Short wars, but nonetheless wars.
Do they bring that sorrow to each other?
They do. In fact, you know, in Israel, you can't, you know, speak for more than about 30 seconds without the subject, you know, something political coming up. It's a very politicized country. And people live the politics because it's close by. I mean, when a war happens, it's 20 miles away. It's not 10,000 miles away on the other side of the world. So when the parents come together, naturally, they're talking about these things. They're talking about current events. And even though these are schools of choice and parents choose to send their kids, we're not just preaching to the choir. When the Arabs and Jews are talking with each other, there's a lot of disagreement. And I find that actually good, because I don't want, if we were all in agreement, then we wouldn't really need to have a school like this. We'd all be, you know,
right.
It's not all roses and holding hands and kumbaya and touchy-feely. It's about people, you know, learning how to disagree, learning how to respect someone else's opinions, voice your own opinions. In fact, one of the foundations of the sort of the culture in the school is that everybody's allowed, kids in age-appropriate ways, are allowed to say whatever they want to say, as long as they do it with respect, without judging, listening, waiting until everybody has a chance to speak. And you see that, especially in the high school, kids have different opinions. A really strong sort of anecdotal sort of example of that is that in Israel, Jewish boys and girls are drafted. They serve. They have mandatory military service. Young men serve after high school for 3 years. Women for 2 years. Vast majority serve. Arabs are not drafted into the army. So in our schools, in the high school, kids have sort of this, at the end of high school, a different trajectory. Arabs in Israel and Palestinians in the West Bank and Gaza look upon the Israeli army in very negative terms. They see it as the army of occupation, the army that's putting down the Palestinians. Jews feel that, you know, they may not relish the idea of going and giving 3 years of their life, but they see this as an army that we have to serve in. We have to defend our country. It's a people's army. In our schools, the Arab kids see the army also through the eyes of their Jewish friends, and they may not love the idea that their friends are going in the army, but they also see that these are friends who are sacrificing something, putting themselves in harm's way. And the Jewish kids, when they get into the army, have a much more humanistic view. They don't just see the Palestinians as the enemy. They see them as human beings, as cousins of their friends from the school. And I think that makes them more sophisticated.
Or if you go back far enough, cousins of each other.
Exactly, exactly.
Let me just point out.
Sure, sure. It's a wonderful, it's more than an experiment. When we started, we really didn't know how it was going to continue. We thought, you know, we're starting, we're laying a seed. Hopefully these kindergartners will move up to first grade and we'll have a new kindergarten class. And now we have waiting lists. And it's really something that I think is...
That is the heartening part, waiting lists.
Right. I think it's probably one of the most important things happening in Israel today.
Clearly. I have a question about Arabs not being in the army. Is there some sense of, I mean, what I learned about that ages ago is you cannot ask somebody to join an army that may put them in a position of taking up guns against their own.
Right.
You can't
right.
do that. The cruelty right. of that is that okay?
I think that's one of the reasons. I think also there is a movement underfoot both in the Arab community and the Jewish community to talk about doing national service of some kind, and many young Arabs say we would like to do national service, but in our own terms, where we could work in our own communities. And
sure.
there's even a kind of slowly developing ad hoc initiative among students in the school that there could be a gap year program for our graduates, Jews and Arabs, who could do a year of service together before the Jewish kids go in the army, before the Arab kids go off to university, where they would go and work in inner city schools helping teachers. There are precedents for that in the Jewish community. Youth movements spend a year of service. It's like a 13th year where they help before they go in the army, but it's never been done together with Jews and Arabs, and that would be a wonderful thing.
Well, it's this
thing.
Together that's the whole name of
right.
the game here.
Right.
Oh, my goodness.
We've also, you know, we've now had six high school graduating classes. Our only school that has a high school is Jerusalem. It's a small high school still, but growing. And we created an alumni program so that we, because we, you know, first of all, these kids are going to go their own directions. They're going to, most of them are university bound. The Jewish kids go to the university after the army. But we want to offer them an opportunity or an avenue to stay together as a group formally. Informally, they get together. It's a small country, so even if they move to a different city, they can yes. travel an hour and see each other. But we did a retreat this past year, and 50% of the graduates came. Including ones that graduated as early as 2011. So this past June was our sixth class that graduated. You know, my vision, my sort of wish is that these young people who graduate in whatever position they are in Israeli society afterwards, they go into business or into government that they're role models
yes.
for. You know, a different kind of relationship yes, between yes. these two communities. They can be leaders and, yes. and have impact.
Does the government have any opinion on what you're doing? Are they helping? Are they hindering?
They are helping. So we, at the very beginning, I don't think this was really well thought off. We just were kind of doing this ad hoc. But we knew that we wanted to create a school system that would be open to all kids, regardless of their socioeconomic background. We didn't want a school system that only upper middle class parents with wealth could send their kids. And so we, from the very beginning, worked with the Israeli Ministry of Education, and a sizable amount of our funding comes from the Ministry of Education. So our schools are accredited and recognized, and luckily, we don't work with the politicians, we work with the professionals. I mean, we've had five different prime ministers and six different ministers of education since Hand in Hand started, but the professionals stay there, and there's a lot of real open-minded people who didn't have the power to create a new school system like we did, but when we came and said we need a one teaching position or two teaching positions, we need help getting a facility to use in the city of Jerusalem or now in Haifa or Tel Aviv, they helped us. And we've gotten support from some very sort of interesting places. After the arson attack on our school, the then Minister of Education visited the school the next day. The next morning, there were 1,000 people, literally 1,000 people, came to the courtyard of our school and expressed solidarity, including Orthodox Jews, including Arabs.
Yeah.
The president of Israel, the current president, his name is Ruvi Rivlin, we call him.
I know he's, about him. I've read about him.
Right. He's not the prime minister. He's sort of like the Queen of England. But he has a lot of stature. He invited all...
He's also apparently, just for people listening, I read an article about him on some magazine like Time or something, and that he's got a very tough attitude. He doesn't pull any punches.
Right. Speaks his mind.
Speaks his mind, and everybody both sides love him.
Not everybody loves him, but the masses,
yes. Yeah.
And he's very popular. He doesn't come from a liberal party. He comes from the Likud party. He's been very, very outspoken against racism.
Mm-hmm.
When he was Speaker of the Knesset, of the Israeli parliament, he supported our school and visited our school. And after this arson attack in 2014, it was two first grade classrooms that were damaged. Nobody was hurt. It happened on a Saturday night. Kids weren't in school. He invited all of the first graders, the two classrooms, which were about 50 kids, to the president's house, which is probably the nicest residents in Israel, and they did their morning lessons with him and his wife. And we have a wonderfully funny photo. These kids came, this was November, it was still warm, they were wearing shorts, they were dressed in t-shirts. He's wearing a suit, his wife's wearing like sweatpants and a t-shirt, and he's kind of like lecturing them, and you see these kids wondering, what's this old guy talking about? It? But it was very fun. And he has written letters of support to what we're doing. Now, and then you have people who you might think are very, very liberal who don't necessarily love what we're doing. So one of the wonderful things about Hand in Hand, it has the ability to cross a lot of party lines.
Well, I also want to say that, I mean, in this country also, the liberal and conservative have lost their meaning.
Right, right. Because they're not monolithic. And
no.
You can be liberal about some things. And in Israel, you know, you can be liberal socially, but conservative when it comes to Jewish-Arab relations. I've met you know, when I lived in Jerusalem, I lived in Jerusalem for 20 years, and we had neighbors who always voted for the most conservative parties, but loved, when I was founding Hand in Hand back in 97, 98, they loved the idea. They had Arab friends. These were people who came, Jews who came from Arabic-speaking countries. I had nothing but respect for what we were doing. And I think that's nice, because this is not a partisan thing. It's controversial. Not everybody likes it. We're, kind of pushing up against some taboos in Israel, but it's really something that I feel is important for on a human level, on a national level, on a cultural level. Yes.
It's ultimately a life-saving project.
Right. I also want to invite our listeners to go to our website, and also
say what that is.
The website is,
because that is a delicious. I've done that.
Yes.
And the children. Oh, please.
It's handinhandk12.org. So it's handinhandk12.org. The numerals,
You should all do yourselves a favor and go see it. Yes.
And if there are people who are planning to visit Israel, they can contact us through the website. Our email's there. And in most cases, we can arrange visits to our schools. They're wonderful places to visit.
So that's very nice. So what you're saying to people is, even if you don't know anybody in Israel, now you've got a friend in Israel.
Exactly.
How nice.
And the website has a lot of sort of background articles, some wonderful videos, some wonderful sort of profiles of some of our staff.
Maybe you could talk a little about just some of your staff. Just
sure.
A couple of them. And then just a couple of your kids and
sure.
friendships.
Sure.
And how they... Go ahead. I mean, you've done a lot of that, but specifics.
Sure. So, first of all, in the lower grades, up through fourth, fifth grade, we have two full-time teachers, two co-teachers in each classroom, one Arab and one Jewish. And they are primarily teaching in their mother tongue. So the Jewish teacher is speaking Hebrew, the Arab teacher is speaking Arabic. And it's partly for language, but also partly for cultural modeling. The teachers that come to our school choose to come to our school. Many of them are young and very, very passionate, and sometimes with less experience, but their passion and enthusiasm helps outweigh some of their lack of experience. Then we also have older teachers who've been teaching for 10, 15, 20 years. I think all of our teachers are good. Some of them are outstanding. It wasn't all easy. It wasn't all that everything was smooth. We had a lot of trial and error. We had an issue, for example, with teaching of English. For quite a few years, the level of English teaching wasn't great. And the principal in Jerusalem brought in a woman who happens to be a friend of mine, a woman named Lynn Greenberg, who had left apartheid South Africa to come to Israel, married an Israeli, had two children there, became an English teacher, and then became a supervisor of English teachers. And she came in and kind of revamped the English language. But she sought out Hand in Hand. I think I first introduced her, and she loves what she's doing. The principal of our elementary school in Jerusalem is a secular Arab Muslim woman named Nadia Kinani. She's from Nazareth, where Jesus lived for many years, in northern Israel, which is an Arab city. And she came to go to university at Hebrew University in Jerusalem, became a teacher at our school, and was like the top notch teacher, an outstanding teacher there, and then became principal about 5 years ago. She's not only a wonderful educator, she's a strong feminist. And on our website, there's an interesting article that she wrote, which is not really about Jewish Arabs, it's about how she's trying to empower some of the Arab women teachers who come from more traditional backgrounds. And she tells this wonderful story about how, in Arab society in Israel, the Arab society tends to be a little bit more conservative, a little bit more patriarchal, where a lot of sort of more traditional men are not used to seeing women in positions of authority. And she tells a story about a man, a parent, who came into the school, and he saw her sitting there, and she could tell that he was not at ease with her being a woman. And she said to him, I can see that you're not comfortable with talking to me as the woman principal here, and if you'd like, I can hang a photo of a man on the wall, and you can talk to him. But I'm really interested in what you have to say, so I'd like you to sit down. And he sat down, and she had a lovely conversation with. And then she goes on to write about how she really wants to empower the young women in the school to really find their voice and speak their voice. That they're not only wonderful teachers, but they can also be independent. And she has done wonders at our school. I mean, our Jerusalem school is the largest school. It has 690 students.
That is just astounding.
Pre-kindergarten through 12th grade. And then we have the principal of our secondary school, junior high and high school, happens to be Jewish, and they work as a team. And she not only creates a wonderful educational sort of forum, she also, you know, the school is kind of an open house. We have a lot of visitors, and she, you know, it's difficult because sometimes people come and they disrupt the classes, but she sees that her mission is not only inward with the students, but it's outward towards the wider community.
Well, I have a question about the language.
Sure.
Obsessed with language as I am. You have the Arab teacher teaching in Arabic and the Jewish teacher teaching in Hebrew.
Right.
But how do they get to the point where they will understand each of them? What kind of immersion do you do?
So
how does this work?
It's what you might call in this country two-way bilingual immersion, which you have two language groups coming together. Both of those languages are not taught, primarily not taught as second language, where you teach subject matter in
that language. Oh, no, I understand
language.
That, but so at what point
So what happens is that the Arab kids, we hypothesized and we found the Arab kids were a minority in Israel who have much more of a survival need to learn Hebrew, which is the dominant language, and their parents generally speak Hebrew. They learn Hebrew much more rapidly than the Jewish kids learn Arabic. But we found that by third grade, you can spend increasing amounts of the school day in one language or the other, and not both. The teachers are not translating, so it's not like the Arab teacher will say something and then the Jewish teacher will say the same thing. Kids will answer in whatever language they want. We also then spend time during the school week giving extra enrichment in mother tongue. So the Arab kids are able to go and learn poetry and literature.
Oh, nice.
And the Jewish kids learn a little bit more conversational Arabic. But what we found is by third grade, all of the Arab kids are speaking Hebrew quite fluently. Not quite as much on the Jewish side, but it takes a little bit longer.
But still, so they're learning the way kids always used to when they came to this country, for example. You hear lots of stories. I mean, I remember as a child, people who came and would talk about how they spoke only one language at home. Only one language at home, and the way they learned English was they went to school and it was taught in English, and
right,
they were around kids. So by the age of five, they learned it very easily
from
being around it. So that's what you,
It's the languages are not equal. Unfortunately, I mean, it's still a majority language and a minority language. And you know, the news and most signs and most of the language of commerce in Israel is in Hebrew. But you have high school students. I mean, there's a young woman now. She's finishing the army, or she just finished the army, named Yael Kanan. Wonderful woman, started in first grade at Hand in Hand. At the end of first grade, she was reading Arabic. She's a native Hebrew speaker. When she speaks English, you think, how many years did you spend in the United States? And she said, well, I've really only been there for short visits. You know, she's a bit unique, but there are many of her friends. She came with an Arab student. I brought them here for a couple of speaking tours. And I speak fluent Hebrew, but only very little Arabic. And so that when they didn't want me to understand them, I was driving them around, they would just start, you know, jabbering in Arabic. But one of the other unique things is that we don't test kids. We don't select kids based on learning ability. We try to keep an even number of Arabs and Jews and an even number of boys and girls. So in our schools, we have a pretty wide distribution of learning abilities. We have some kids who are very strong learners, and we have some kids who need extra support. The goal is to create a model where kids are getting a quality education, but the context of, you know, Musa and Moshe, which are the Arabic version for Moses, Ibrahim and Avraham, which are Arabic and Hebrew for Abraham, are sitting together at the same table and building some kind of camaraderie. People often ask me when I speak, they ask if kids get together outside the classroom. Because, you know, in the classroom, especially in the younger grades, the teacher can tell them where to sit.
Sure.
We don't dictate who plays with who in the playground. But we find that the majority of these kids get invited to each other's homes for birthday parties, for play dates, for sleepovers. There's some really strong friendships and bonds that are formed from a young age that continue. Most of our high school kids have started at a young age. And that also happens with the parents. You know, in Middle Eastern sort of hospitality rules, you can't get invited to someone's house without being sat down and given something to drink and cake,
and
especially in the Arab community. And so when I told that story about this young mother who got her daughter got invited to a sleepover, she got to know the parents of this Arab girl, because some of those friendships on the parent level outlast the kids, because kids change friends and things change very quickly with kids. Whereas, so there are some groups of parents who, on their own,
so many nice byproducts of this.
Nice byproducts.
I have a another question, just to kind of move it over to love letters, because that is so what I'm about, because
sure.
I know the power of them in every single walk of life. And I can see, obviously, so much here. Usually I'll ask my guest who gets your love letter today. And you can tell me that, because I'd like to know. But it's built into your whole system.
Right.
Because do the kids write ever to each other? Is there anything in handwriting to each other? And I'm asking this because you are such a huge part of history, huge, that wouldn't it be wonderful if in 50 years or 100 years or 2,000 years, because we go back to, we find things written on goatskins, right? And handwriting is king. And wouldn't it be nice to be able to have those things archived so that in years and generations to come, you have documented your history in your own hand?
Right.
What do you do about that?
I mean, first of all, I know that, younger generation, today with texting and emailing and handwriting is an issue. I know that my daughter, does have really nice handwriting, and they do emphasize that in school. I think primarily, Israel is a wired country, and everybody has a cell phone, has an iPhone or a Samsung or whatever. So these kids are texting a lot. I know that we did some projects with a while ago, quite a few years ago, with, I believe, a third or fourth grade class at our school in the Galilee and a school in Florida, a public school in Florida, in which I think that some of these things were scanned and sent that way, but they wrote cards in their handwriting in English, and there they wrote them in Hebrew or Arabic, and there was some translation that came with that. Some of them actually were mailed, so they actually got the physical
thing. Okay, but that's a whole different gift. To get it in the mail, because your mail these days is a pile of garbage,
right.
As a rule. No
right.
offense to anyone who advertises
right.
through it. And this is just like getting a bag of diamonds. But
right.
When you're talking about texting, I did a workshop with a group of kindergartners in love letters.
Okay.
Five-year-olds who were big on the two thumbs.
Right.
And they couldn't get enough of it.
They loved the handwriting.
They sat down, and some of them in a one-hour slot wrote four love letters. They just couldn't do
wow.
it enough.
Wow.
There is something different about laying your feelings out on paper
sure.
that connects directly to your brain
sure.
function.
Sure. And it helps your dexterity.
My dream workshop would be to, once a semester, to give every child a piece of paper and an envelope and say, look to your right and write something you like about that person and mail it.
That's lovely. That's lovely.
It takes 5 minutes.
That's lovely.
And you've got, okay.
I mean, something that we can definitely look at. I mean, I know that also you get something on a nice card. I mean, it can be a nice card of a photo of, especially I think, these are kids who, we do get a lot of international attention, and kids love the idea of getting attention from someone from a different country.
Sure.
It makes them feel special both ways. It's sometimes hard because what it usually takes is teachers who really want to push it for their class. I have a kind of connection with this English teacher, and it's great practice for their English.
10 minutes a semester.
Right. It's not a lot
of
time.
Nothing. And I was going to ask something else about that on the thing of I forgot where I was, but
okay.
having to do with letters and seeing it laid out.
Right. I think that, especially as our kids want to practice their English, I'll give you an example. We have every summer a day camp, and this could be a project for our day camp. It's a day camp called Project Harmony. It was started very uniquely by two young women, Jewish students at the University of Chicago, who came to us at Hand in Hand and said, we want to help do something with Hand in Hand. We would love to organize a summer day camp. It's now run 6 summers in a row. These young women are in their late 20s. It's run in English for 4th through 8th graders, mostly hand-in-hand students, but also other Jewish and Arab kids from elsewhere in Jerusalem that have never met each other. Mm-hmm. The kids practice their English, and the counselors are all volunteers from the United States, college students and some high school students. So, one, we're creating this great summer program for high school students, for kids in Israel. Two, we're getting Jewish and Arab kids from outside of hand-in-hand to meet each other. Three, these kids are practicing their English. And four, we're giving this wonderful opportunity to American young people to come and work in Israel. To me, that would be a wonderful place where you could maybe do some of these letters. Possibly one of the things that I could throw out to the people who lead this camp is before these counselors come, they could collect letters from people they know. They could bring them, maybe in cards, so the kids have something really nice to look at.
Oh, and by the way, you're talking about cards. You know, they manufacture cards today that have a slick finish.
Okay.
And they're great looking, but ink does not stick
to it. You have to get like a more of a porous...
Because you want these letters to last as long as the Dead Sea Scrolls have.
So you want to get those kind of like the
papers. Yes, and good and indelible ink.
Right.
I've actually written a couple of letters where I'm sloppy.
You mean like a very thin Sharpie or something like that.
Whatever will last. Right. I once did one and actually to my granddaughter for her to open when she was old enough. And she at the age of 7, opened it, and there was nothing on the page. It had just faded,
away. Right.
Oh, I was horrified.
Right.
So that's really important.
Right.
Okay. Oh,
yeah.
Thank you for doing this with me.
Sure.
I am just close to tears listening to everything you're saying on so many levels, you know, of disappointment that this isn't more widely known, that the news industry is what it is, and that it just holds the hope for final peace.
Right. I mean, about it not being known. I mean, there was someone that I coined the phrase that hand in hand is still the best kept secret around.
Yes.
And we don't want it to be a secret.
No.
And we want it to be well known.
Yes.
I mean, I want to just mention something about that. One of, you know, if there are listeners out there, this summer program is a wonderful opportunity for volunteers, and they do not have to be young college students. They can be people in their, you know, as old as, you know, as, you know, as long as they can get to Israel.
And of any religion or gender or preference or anything.
Uh-huh. Okay. And it's a five-week program.
Open to everyone.
I mean, you know, they have to apply and have to make sure they have some experience with kids and they have to pay their own way there and stuff.
Yeah, that's
right. I mean, to me, this is sort of, you know, you know, what I do now in the U.S. is I do mostly fundraising, but this is really my baby, and I feel like I help give birth to it.
Yes.
But I do want to mention that I co-founded Hand in Hand. I'm not the sole founder.
Oh, I was going to ask you that.
I'm Jewish, and I co-founded it with an Arab colleague, a man named Amin Khalaf, who had been a teacher. He taught Arabic language in Jewish schools and also Arabic language the way English is, you know, taught in Arab schools. And he had a personal sort of, you know, motivation. He has three children. His oldest had been in a small preschool at the Jerusalem YMCA that they experimented with a class that was kind of mixed. But then that class ended and there was no continuation, and he wanted something different for his kids. His oldest son, Yazan, is now, I would guess, 21 or 22, was in our first class. And then his second son graduated a year ago, and then he has a daughter who's now in ninth grade. He's no longer, we were co-founders and co-directors, and how he's moved on to other things. So it really, from the very beginning, was about Jews and Arabs working together.
And there's an underlying kind of philosophy there. There was an article some time ago, it was just a little picture, and okay, I hand it to the newspapers for putting this one in. This was a good thing. And it showed the workers, the owners of an Arab bakery, and they hired Jews. They had some Jews working there, and they all had T-shirts. Orange T-shirts across which was written, "We will not be enemies."
Yes, yes, that's lovely.
That just brought me to tears. What is this enemieship for?
Right.
Okay. Thank you. You know, maybe next time you're in town, you'll come back and give us an update.
I would love to.
I'm going to go to your website myself again, just for the joy of it.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
Sure. And can I mention the website one more time?
Please.
It's all handinhandk12.org. handinhandk12.org. And this is wonderful. I mean, we really, you know, I think it's important for people to learn about this, be inspired, understand that peace is possible.
I have friends who will no longer look at the newspaper or watch the news because it makes them feel horrible. Because we know there's dreadful in the world, but we also know that there is wonderful. Oh, you're on the side of wonderful.
Thank you,
Janet.
Thank you.
Until next time, Janet Gallen and
Lee Gordon
saying goodbye, and I hope there's a next time for you here.
Thank you.